I'm Hugh Bennett for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Our cover story this week: Emerging Flight Paths. The mix of flights at Raleigh-Durham International Airport is rapidly evolving, and some small, nimble carriers are the ones leading the change. Before the cover story, we'll go into Biz and read the reporter pages. Biz is written and compiled by managing editor Dane Huffman. His top story this week: Last Call at Iconic 42nd Street Oyster Bar. The 42nd Street Oyster Bar in Raleigh enjoyed a raucous send-off in March with its final night March 30th, as the site itself faces an uncertain future. Interest surged after Triangle Business Journal broke the news March 7th that the restaurant would close on March 30th. One manager said the restaurant would have maybe 350 reservations a night before the news, a number that swelled to 800 as fans rushed back and waited in long lines to get in. The original location at Jones and West Streets picked up its name after some Raleigh doctors went to New York and discovered draft beer on 42nd Street. That location closed in 1974. But the Oyster Bar roared back in 1987, opening in a building that dates to 1943 and featuring nearly 20,000 square feet of space. It instantly became a highlight of the restaurant and social scene as politicians and business leaders filled the tables and young professionals packed the bar area, especially on Thursday nights. But as the Triangle changed, the Oyster Bar did not. The biggest change was simply the value of the land. What had been a gritty part of town in the 1980s became prime real estate. The land, most of which is owned by the Hobby Family, LLC, has a total assessed value of $9.7 million. Not far away, a 0.13-acre piece of property in downtown recently sold for $1.93 million. It's not hard to do the math. With the lease up, owners Brad Hurley and John Vick decided not to renew and go out in style. The final night was a fitting finish with a packed crowd, a cheer for the chefs, and even some customers taking shaving cream to the face. But after 9 p.m., the crowd slowly slipped away as Monday morning beckoned, and 42nd Street joined Crazy Zach's, Edwards Grocery, and Finch's as one of Raleigh's fondest memories. Zaxby's joins changing lineup on Franklin Street. Downtown Chapel Hill has added another chicken chain. Zaxby's, known for its chicken fingers and Texas toast, is open at 127 East Franklin Street, the former home of Capriotti's Sandwich Shop, tucked between the Blue Horn Lounge and Cold Stone Creamery. This restaurant fills a 2,140-square-foot space with extended late-night hours that appeal to college students. Zaxby's, based in Athens, Georgia, is no stranger to the college scene in the Triangle. The location on Hillsborough Street near the NC State University campus has a steady stream of customers. Startups get to count on major KPMG support. Imagine you were a small startup and suddenly a major accounting firm said, "Hey, let us help you, and we'll share our Rolodex." That's essentially what is happening now, as KPMG is partnering with Launch Chapel Hill to create a smoother path to market for innovations coming out of UNC Chapel Hill. KPMG will provide direct client access for startups, a huge lift for a small company looking to have a big impact. It all starts with a 5-week program beginning May 5th, but the goal is scalable, AI-enabled accelerator model that can be expanded and replicated. Cliff Justice, the head of enterprise innovation at KPMG, said the focus will be on helping startups refine their customer discovery process, validate market opportunities, secure pilot engagements, and prepare them to scale. Launch Chapel Hill, which began in 2013, has helped 190 companies raise more than $100 million so far. Preston Wood is promoting Hancock to GM. One of the largest private country clubs in the Triangle is getting a new general manager. Larry Connor, the GM of Preston Wood Country Club in Cary since 2019, is retiring April 13th. Taking his place will be Lee Hancock, who joined the club in 2015 as the director of golf course maintenance. Prior to Preston Wood, Hancock had nearly two decades of experience in the golf course agronomy industry. Connor has spent 23 years at Preston Wood, beginning as the director of golf operations. My professional journey through the private club industry has been long and at times tenuous, but I cannot imagine a better community in which to conclude my career, he said. More accolades for Cary as a great place to live. It seems everybody wants to be in Cary. The former bedroom community has blossomed. With the median household income around $130,000, Cary is an attractive place for professionals and families. Cary has been named the best place to live in North Carolina, according to Niche.com's new rankings for 2025, which put Cary at number 28 nationally. Neighboring Morrisville and Apex are number 2 and 3 on the North Carolina list. Turning now to the reporter pages, the first one is Banking and Technology, and it's compiled and written by Lauren Onosorge. His new focus, help curb screen time. Retirement just wasn't sticking for Brad Brinegar, who ran advertising firm McKinney from 2002 to 2018 before transitioning to the chairman emeritus role. He was filling his time teaching at Duke University as executive in residence at Duke's Innovation and Entrepreneurship Initiative, but the entrepreneurial gears kept turning, and 2 years ago he decided to take the plunge again and even got his old company to invest. His new project is Grogo, the patent-pending screen time app he co-founded with Richard Mara. Brinegar didn't initially expect a conversation with his good friend in Chicago would lead to a startup. Mara said, "I have an idea for a product I'd like to run past you. The same two-factor authentication you use to access your bank account, what if it could be spun into a tool to help parents capitalize on their kids' screen time?" Mara, who became founder and CEO of Grogo, had a good idea, Brinegar said. "Couldn't they have to go through some kind of gate to be able to access their phones?" Brinegar remembers his friend saying. "As kids are scrolling their social media, their apps could suddenly lock up, and they have to answer a series of educational questions to get access." Brinegar thought the idea had legs, but he knew not to get too excited before vetting. They conducted a survey with moms to check out the idea and found that parents wanted a way to interrupt the constant device scrolling. Brinegar said the app is designed with flexibility, allowing parents to set the limits, including the length of time their kids can scroll uninterrupted. Parents can also pick the educational subject. Brinegar and Mara funded the startup through a friends and family raise. McKinney also invested. Wolfspeed share says CHIPS Act likely to evolve. Should Wolfspeed snag CHIPS Act dollars, it's unlikely to be at the level of what was promised under President Joe Biden. That's according to Thomas Werner, chairman of the Durham Semiconductor Company, speaking hours after announcing new CEO Robert Furrell. Werner also understands that the relationship with the White House is critical. Werner said March 27th that the funding agreement is likely to evolve because the company has evolved and because the CHIPS office is different. There's a new administration. Last year, Wolfspeed had been approved for $750 million in CHIPS grants from the U.S. Department of Commerce to be matched by $750 million in private investment. Bankers and credit unions face off on new banking bill. Once again, legislators on Jones Street are looking to address banking deserts with credit unions. Bankers, just like last time, a measure like this was pushing for a vote in 2023, are pushing back, saying it gives credit unions an unfair advantage. House Bill 187 passed the House of Representatives. Proponents of the legislation, which would grant permission for credit unions to serve residents without nearby access to financial services options, say it's a way to ensure access. There are about 650 fewer branches across North Carolina than there were in 2013. Bankers oppose the measure. Peter Gwaltney, CEO of the NC Bankers Association, said the bill would stretch membership standards so that practically anyone can be a member. He sees that as an unfair advantage in light of exemptions credit unions currently receive from federal and state corporate income and franchise taxes. Branch interest remains high across state. Regional and national banks filed to open 6 new branches in North Carolina in first quarter 2025. That includes 2 branches planned for the Triangle. Filings with the Office of the Comptroller of Currency show. Not all of the branches have been approved yet, including that of the most recent bank to file in the region, Fifth Third Bank. The Cincinnati Bank wants to put a branch at 4880 Highway 42 in the Flowers Plantation area east of Clayton. The 1,900-square-foot branch, referred to as Clayton Flowers, should open in the third or fourth quarter of this year, according to the bank. This location allows us to better serve our customers with additional reach in the greater Triangle market, said Tommy Lloyd, the bank's Carolinas retail executive. The new branch will be full service and house 4 employees. It will also have a drive-through and ATM. Fifth Third recently opened its 29th Triangle branch in Apex. The bank has also filed to open a branch in Charlotte at 3029 Pineville Matthews Road. Huntington National Bank has filed papers for a location in Raleigh at Kane Realty's new One North Hills Tower. J.P. Morgan Chase also has filed for 3 new branches, with one each in Charlotte, Huntersville, and Asheville. Kaylee Thompson brings us the news about real estate and development. Her top story, booming Cary area to add investment. A Raleigh developer is building on its recent success along the Highway 55 corridor in Cary. After seeing high demand for its 21,000-square-foot medical building, Atlas Stark jumped on the opportunity to build more medical office space plus retail on an adjacent parcel. The developer is under contract for the land and going through the site review process with the town of Cary. Called McCrimmon Village, the new project will have 2 buildings totaling 30,100 square feet of medical office and retail space. One of the buildings will be 19,600 square feet, while the other will be 10,500 square feet. There will also be outdoor seating if food and beverage retailers sign on for space. Trey Adams, managing partner with Atlas Stark, said the company isn't targeting any specific type of retailers and is open to meeting demand. A flyer for the new space shows the rental rate would be $45 per square foot, and suite sizes range from 1,500 square feet to 19,600 square feet. The tenant improvement allowance would be $60 per square foot, delivered as a cold, dark shell. The developer anticipates completing site planning this year, with construction starting in 2026. McCrimmon Village will be on 3.96 acres at 4405 Highway 55. The forested lot is vacant and assessed at a little more than $2.8 million. The Highway 55 corridor is booming with the development. McCrimmon Village isn't far from the Alston Town Center and its upcoming second phase that will include a new Lifetime Fitness. South of Atlas Stark's new project is a development along Carpenter Fire Station Road with 300 units, 49 townhomes, and a public park. Across Highway 55 from Parkside Town Commons is a site for Alston Yards, which calls for nearly 1,000 apartments, a hotel, and 260,000 square feet of commercial space on 40 acres. Price Company recapitalizes 5 properties. A major Raleigh student housing developer has recapitalized 5 of its properties in one deal. The Price Company's partner, Nuveen of New York, decided to sell its ownership in the 5 properties. It sold to New York-based InvestCorp, which made the deal with a purchase price of $70.45 million total, according to Wake County Deeds. The portfolio includes 1 student housing complex in Raleigh, Signature 1505 on Hillsborough Street. We saw upside potential in Signature 1505 and wanted to keep it in our portfolio. We decided to recap the deal when our partner decided to sell, President John Price said. He said the deal was a single transaction and the purchase price was for all 5 assets. In addition to the 150-unit Signature 1505, the recapitalization included Signature 1909 in Austin, Texas, Cabana Beach, San Marcos in Texas, Cabana Beach, Gainesville in Florida, and Park on Morton in Bloomington, Indiana. Dillwig puts famous Atlanta Tower on market. As office market headwinds continue, a Durham commercial real estate firm is putting an iconic 36-story Atlanta Tower up for sale, and one that is home to the city's National Basketball Association team. Shortly after putting University Tower in Durham up for sale, Dillwig has now listed the 101 Marietta Street Tower, located in downtown. The tower dates to the 1970s. Since 2022, Dillweg has sold 3 office buildings and released 4 back to the lender. There's no listing price, but offers for 101 Marietta are expected to come in at about $100 a foot, or roughly $67.5 million, according to a Real Estate Observer. Dillweg paid $68.8 million for it in 2015, according to property records. The tower is 62% leased with tenants like the Atlanta Hawks. New York firm buys ice-making plant for $5 million plus. A Northwest Raleigh manufacturing building sold for double its assessed value in a sale leaseback. Ready Ice sold its Raleigh Manufacturing Center to W.P. Carey of New York for $10.99 million, according to Wake County Deed Records. The sale is for 2 buildings on 2 parcels, with a combined assessed value of a little more than $5.2 million. The two companies signed a lease agreement for a term of 20 years, with an option to renew for another 9 years. Tenants with long lease terms attract prices over valuation in real estate transactions. Office buildings in Cary with lease terms extending to 2034 sold for $72.5 million. The North Carolina Medical Society sold its building and will remain on a long-term lease, and U.S. General Services Administration is on a 10-year lease in a building that sold for $9.5 million, well above its assessed value. W.P. Carey specializes in acquiring single-tenant properties in North America and Europe. Most of its acquisitions involve sale leasebacks with well-known tenants. W.P. Carey has 1,555 net lease properties with 355 tenants and $1.3 billion in annualized base rent. It owns various properties throughout the Triangle, including the former Advance Auto Parts campus in Raleigh. Zach Ezone writes the Research and Innovation section. UNC and Duke settled dispute over beds. UNC Health has a clear path to developing a new hospital near Cary after reaching a settlement with Duke Health. Officials from the two health systems confirmed March 28th that they have mutually resolved all pending litigation surrounding the approval and development of a new UNC Health hospital in southern Durham County, according to a joint statement the organizations emailed to Triangle Business Journal. Meanwhile, Duke Health will also add inpatient beds to its main campus in Durham. This settlement means UNC Health will advance the development of the new UNC Hospital's Cary campus in the southern part of Durham County. The facility will include 102 acute care beds and 2 operating rooms and is expected to open around the start of 2032, according to the statement. Duke University Hospital in Durham will receive approval to add more inpatient beds, but officials did not disclose a number. The settlement ends a lengthy dispute that began in the fall of 2021 when the NC Department of Health and Human Services approved UNC Health's plans to build a $252 million hospital with 40 beds in Research Triangle Park. A year later, the DHHS approved a second application for UNC Health to add another 34 beds to the future facility. And last year, DHHS approved a third application from UNC Health for another 38 beds, increasing the cost of the hospital to $371 million and the number of beds to 112. Over the same period, DHHS denied 3 separate applications from Duke Health, which filed appeals contesting those decisions. Health officials did not say what led to the change of location for UNC Health's new hospital, which was previously planned for the heart of RTP near the intersection of Highway 54 and 147. DHHS losing 80 jobs amid federal funding cuts. One of North Carolina's largest state agencies is reducing the size of its workforce amid federal funding cuts. The NC Department of Health and Human Services plans to cut more than 80 jobs after losing over $100 million in federal funding. The department's cuts are in response to the federal government's abrupt and immediate termination of several federal grants, a DHHS spokesman said in an emailed statement. This follows news reports about the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services canceling more than $11 billion in grants to states to support the tracking of infectious diseases, among other activities. In North Carolina, the grants have supported immunization efforts, funding for the new NC Immunization Registry, infectious disease monitoring and response, behavioral health, substance use disorder services, and more, the DHHS spokesperson said. Humacyte defends product safety. A Durham firm is pushing back on a report questioning the safety of its lead product. The New York Times detailed concerns some scientists at the U.S. Food and Drug Administration raised about Humacyte's lead product, Symvess. What is deeply troubling is that the Times relied on a single source for the majority of its reporting in this story. Dr. Robert Lee, who was not part of the formal review team for Symvess at the FDA. CEO Dr. Nora Nicholson said in a response March 27th, Lee has since left the government and has co-founded a consulting firm focused on helping companies obtain medical device approvals. Symvess is a vascular conduit made from bioengineered human tissue that can be used in arterial replacement and repair. The Times reported on a discrepancy between Humacyte and the FDA in interpreting some of the clinical data. For example, Humacyte said that the primary patency rate, or blood flow, of its vessel in patients at 30 days was 84.3%. Meanwhile, the FDA determined the rate to be instead 66.7%. The difference is due to the FDA taking a more conservative approach, Nicholson told TBJ. Despite these differences, the FDA ultimately approved Symvess in December. News from the Greater Triangle is brought to us by Ben Tobin. In Moore County, Pinehurst says okay to cottage project. After years of back-and-forth deliberation, a project that will bring dozens of cottage homes to the village of Pinehurst has received the green light. The Pinehurst Village Council voted during a meeting March 25th to approve an official zoning map amendment for Trotter Hills, a subdivision set to have 48 single-family detached cottages across 8 acres off Trotter Drive. The project is being led by Red Pine Investments, a Pinehurst LLC, tied to local developer Mike Atosky. The project had to go through several iterations before receiving approval. In November 2023, the Pinehurst Planning and Zoning Board recommended denial for a proposal that included 34 single-family attached townhomes on top of 31 single-family detached cottages. Since then, we have spent many hours reading through the guidelines, sketching plan after plan and plan after plan, asking a lot of questions and doing a lot of listening, Atosky said during the meeting. We have refined our initial plan numerous times and have incorporated the feedback of many stakeholders in the area, he said. Some residents spoke against the project, citing concerns over traffic and how the neighborhood's design would fit in with the overall character of Pinehurst. Red Pine Investments purchased the land in October 2022 for $800,000, according to Moore County deed records from that time. Atosky did not respond to requests seeking comment on estimated sales prices and a construction timeline. Houses will range from 1,600 square feet to 2,000 square feet with 3 to 4 bedrooms, his team said. Though not bursting at the seams with new housing developments, Pinehurst is still growing at a quick clip. The most recent estimates from the U.S. Census Bureau have Pinehurst at close to 18,500 residents. That's way up from the estimated 13,124 residents the village had in 2010. In Johnston County, hotel sale off I-95 continues hospitality trend. Another hotel has sold for millions in Johnston County off Interstate 95, continuing a trend of hospitality-related purchases in the area. Shubhi Lakshmi, a Selma LLC tied to several local residents, recently purchased the La Quinta Inn and Suites off 1695 Outlet Center Drive in Selma for $6 million, according to Johnston County deed records. The seller is New Jersey's J. Sy Corp., which purchased the property for $4.8 million in July 2020. Representatives of Shubhi Lakshmi LLC could not be reached for comment on the purchase. Per Colliers, the La Quinta Inn in Selma was built as a Hampton Inn by Hilton in 1998. In 2021, the hotel reopened after renovations under the La Quinta brand. The hotel has 80 guest rooms. Sandwiched between U.S. 70 and I-95, the hotel is in a booming area near the Eastfield Crossing Project, which will include more than 3 million square feet for retail, office, and homes upon completion. In Chatham County, 58 acres near U.S. 1 sold for more than $11 million. Chatham County land is still selling for sizzling prices as another parcel in the vibrant county has recently sold for 8 figures. The Conservancy Real Estate Group, an LLC tied to developer Andrew Ross, purchased a little more than 58 acres off Old U.S. 1 Highway and Rush Road for over $11 million last month, according to county deed records. The seller of the land is Carey's Chatham Land Group, LLC. Documents submitted to Chatham County government may serve as a hint for what is coming next. Ross submitted plans last year for the conservancy at Jordan Lake, which will include 163 lots. Lot sizes range from 4,875 square feet to 10,416 square feet, with the average lot size being 6,585 square feet per the plans. And finally, in Brunswick County, land near Leland sold, new homes expected. As Brunswick County continues to lead the state in year-over-year population growth rate, so too does it continue to attract major investments from out-of-state real estate firms. DRP Bookbinder Multistate, an LLC tied to DW Partners of New York, purchased a little under 84 acres off Old Fayetteville Road and U.S. 7476 in the Brunswick County town of Leland last month, according to deed records. The purchase contains five vacant parcels located by North Brunswick High School. Representatives of DW Partners did not respond to requests seeking comment. The seller of the land is homebuilder Lennar. The deed between Lennar and DW Partners notes that the land is for the Kendall Cove subdivision. No subdivision by that name is listed on Lennar's webpage for neighborhoods it either has or is working on in the Brunswick County area. Lennar, with a nationwide reach, has certainly shown interest in Brunswick County in the past. Recently, the Florida-based home builder purchased 300 acres off Brick Landing Road in Shallotte for $10 million in February. Lennar spokeswoman Danielle Taco said at the time that the purchase is for an upcoming neighborhood with 560 single-family detached homes. The retail and restaurant news is brought to us by Kate Tracy. Topsail Steamer coming to Raleigh. First, they were fans, then they joined the franchise. Dave Riley and Kristen Thompson Riley plan to open the Triangle's first retail location for Topsail Steamer, a North Carolina seafood company that appeared on the hit show Shark Tank. The couple has leased its first retail space in the Triangle at 5003 Falls of the Noose Road, north of the Beltline in the Quail Corner Shopping Center. The seafood joint, which sells ready-to-go seafood steamer buckets, plans to open in the fall. The franchisees thought the location in a new Quail Corners building would be perfect for their first Topsail Steamer brick and mortar. We knew that there's a lot of traffic and the demographic in the area was really good for us, as well as with Topsail Steamer, Thompson Riley said. In the 1,075 square foot space, customers can expect to see seafood displayed on ice and a long counter for ordering their seafood buckets to take home. It's a smaller storefront because we really don't need that much space since no one is actually eating in, Thompson Riley said. Once the first store is up and running, the couple hopes to open more Topsail Steamer locations in Raleigh. Riley has 20 years of experience in restaurants. Thompson Riley has a background in construction technology, including at Autodesk. In 2020, the couple bought a house in Topsail Beach. They became regulars at the Topsail Steamer store there, founded by Daniel Mann. Topsail Steamer now has locations in New Jersey, Alabama, Delaware, and Florida. Its North Carolina locations are in Topsail, Wrightsville Beach, and Charlotte. We just really believe in the product and what it is and how great it is to be able to bring this back to your family and eat with family and friends, and how easy it is to cook and clean up, Riley said. Historic Apex building sells to local for $4.5 million. A century-old building in downtown Apex is now under local ownership. The Tobacco and Mule Exchange building, located at 225 North Salem Street, sold recently for $4.525 million per Wake County Records. The new owner is MJ2 Holdings, LLC, whose manager is Jonathan Pierce. Pierce is the co-founder of Scratch Kitchen and Tap Room and CEO of the Mason Jar Tavern. Scratch Kitchen occupies part of the building, which dates to 1917. At this time, we do not have any plans to change anything with the building and look forward to continuing to work with the current tenants in the building to make it as successful as possible for everyone, Pierce said in an email. Scratch Kitchen also has a location in downtown Cary. At 15,976 square feet, the price per square foot was $283. Realty Resource Capital Corp. of New York purchased the building in 2015 for $2.825 million. Shoe retailer plans third Triangle store. A boot store is scooting into a busy shopping center in Cary. It's third in the Triangle. Red Wing Shoes, a brand of Minnesota-based Red Wing Shoe Company, plans to open in Carey's Crossroads Plaza. The 2,234-square-foot space was formerly home to a Hickory Farms gift basket store. Red Wing is looking to make a few renovations to the space, including HVAC, lights, fixtures, plumbing, electrical, and other updates. The total budget for the project is approximately $180,000 per Carey plans. Crossroads Plaza will be Red Wing's third location in the Triangle. It currently has one store in Raleigh and one in Durham, in addition to four others in Winston-Salem, Concord, Greensboro, and Wilmington. Yemeni Coffee to expand in the Triangle. A Yemeni coffee chain is planning what it says is the largest coffee shop in North Carolina and the largest for the chain amid a big expansion to the state. Haraz Coffee House, founded in Michigan, has signed a lease for a 4,000-square-foot shop at 5911 Pointer Village Parkway in northeast Raleigh, near the Triangle Town Center. Franchisee Hajaj Cade plans to open the location in September. It's one of three Triangle locations that Cade plans to open. Another Raleigh location is in the works at 3915 Western Boulevard, which could open in June. He plans to open the Durham location at 1105 West Main Street in early 2026. Meanwhile, other franchisees have signed leases in Apex and Carey for two more Haraz coffee houses. Cade, whose uncle Hamza Nasser is the CEO of Haraz, said he liked being located amid a plethora of other food and beverage options near the Triangle Town Center. "We were trying to open a bigger location than the one we have on Western Boulevard. This was one of the most decent locations around here, and it's a safe area around here, too," Cade said. The coffee chain sources its coffee beans directly from Yemen, just south of Saudi Arabia. The final reporter page is On the Coast, written by Dane Huffman. The Sanderling Resort gets a major facelift. Vivian Howard opens new restaurant as part of Fresh Outer Banks landmark, or Refresh. Looking to visit the Outer Banks this summer, the Sanderling Resort is ready to unveil its big coastal refresh. The Sanderling Resort, built in 1985 in the small town of Duck, is now open with extensive changes. Plus, a restaurant from acclaimed chef Vivian Howard will open Memorial Day weekend. Managing Director Jeff Young said the updates have been at least 2 years in the making, with construction starting last November during the resort's slow season. "The Sanderling is such an iconic landmark here on the Outer Banks, and this will be our 40th anniversary. It couldn't be a better time," Young said. Construction involved taking each of the Sanderling's 123 hotel rooms down to the drywall and adding new fixtures and furniture. The public spaces all received updates, including the spa and waterfront restaurant. The restaurant, Theodosia, is named after Aaron Burr's daughter and wife to South Carolina Governor Joseph Alston. Theodosia Alston was lost at sea at the age of 29. The restaurant will feature seafood and southern cuisine when it opens Memorial Day weekend under the leadership of Howard, who has restaurants in Kinston and in Charleston, South Carolina. "Between our ownership group and our management company, I think there is a full court press to get her on board, which she gracefully accepted," the Young said. The Sanderling also converted its indoor pool into an 8,500-square-foot ballroom with 30-foot ceilings overlooking the Currituck Sound. The Sanderling still has two outdoor pools. In May, the cost of a night at the Sanderling ranges from $403 to $682, according to its website. Wrightsville Beach home on sale for $16.1 million. An immaculate beach home in Wrightsville Beach is looking for a buyer with a price that could set a record as the most expensive home in North Carolina. The home at 2203 North Lumina Avenue on the north end is listed for $16.1 million. It first hit the market last summer for a whopping $16.9 million. It was taken off the market in November and came back on this month with the price drop, according to Zillow. The home, owned by a Charlotte family, is 5,658 square feet with four bedrooms and five bathrooms. The nearly half-acre lot faces Lollipop Bay, offering incredible sunset views from the rooftop patio. The home was built in 1995 and remodeled in 2006. Property records show its assessed value is $8.65 million. The listing price for 2203 North Lumina Avenue is impressive, as it even tops some of the highest figured homes on the coveted Figure 8 Island. In recent years, the soaring prices for beach homes has been fueled by demand from wealthy out-of-state buyers. A New York investment banker paid nearly $14 million for a home on Figure Eight Island last year. As for the statewide record for the most expensive home, a mountain mansion in Banner Elk sold for nearly $16 million last fall. Tariffs and trade uncertainty leave ports in flux. Port real estate markets may see impact from changing trade policy and higher tariffs under President Donald Trump, but to what extent remains unclear. Several events have created uncertainty for ports, including last year's collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, labor strikes, and global conflicts. Tariffs are only the latest snarl for importers and for port-adjacent real estate markets. A lot of companies are looking to mitigate risk. They're looking to identify business opportunity options and to diversify within their supply chain so they aren't left without options, said J.C. Renshaw, North American head of supply chain consulting at Savills. Still, container volume rose 11.2% last year to 61.3 million 20-foot equivalent units, that's TEUs, across the top 15 North American ports, according to Savills Research. Overall, $438.9 billion was imported from China in 2024, up 2.8% from 2023, according to the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative. Despite recent attention on tariffs, the consumer remains the biggest economic factor for port real estate markets, Renshaw Russo said. With inflation ticking back up slightly in the most recent Consumer Price Index report, that'll be an important factor to monitor to determine potential impact on the consumer, Russo said. The consumer is king and queen and every other royalty in this whole equation, Renshaw said. If demand drops off, then all bets are off. But as of right now, there's still insatiable demand for international goods. We turn now to this week's cover story. Small airlines drive big growth at RDU. 40% of Raleigh-Durham International Airport's destinations are served by Avelo and Breeze, carriers that didn't exist before the pandemic. Cover story is written by Lauren Onosords this week. For Avelo Airlines, Raleigh-Durham International Airport had been Plan B. The ultra-low-cost airline wanted to open its next crew base in Fort Myers, Florida, a market where post-pandemic leisure travel trends had shown early success. Then Hurricane Ian hit in 2022, forcing Avelo to suspend all its newly announced Fort Myers flights and scramble to find another landing pad for its planes as it built out its East Coast network. We decided it made more sense to transition our plans to RDU, said Andrew Levy, the airline's CEO. In February 2023, just 9 months after its planes first took off at RDU, Avelo doubled down and announced the new base, which now supports two planes. 2 years later, the number of Avelo flights out of RDU has jumped to 10. Three of those are international destinations, Montego Bay, Jamaica, Punta Cana, the Dominican Republic, and Nassau, the Bahamas, which takes off in May. Competitor Breeze Airways, which launched shortly after Avelo, now has 26 destinations from RDU. Its CEO, David Neilman, has expressed international aspirations, too. He's just waiting for planes and federal approval. Also set to take off at RDU are WestJet and Bermudair. It's a scramble of activity that just keeps coming. In 2019, RDU had 66 nonstop destinations and 400 daily flights. After the pandemic, the network is back and bigger than ever before at 79 destinations. But the map's growth isn't coming from traditional heavyweights such as Delta Airlines, American Airlines, and United Airlines. In fact, 40% of destinations from RDU are served by Avelo and Breeze, carriers that didn't exist before the pandemic. And those smaller airlines are leading the leaps to new international markets. Part of their explosive growth is because, unlike Charlotte Douglas International Airport and its gigantic American presence, RDU is not a hub for a major carrier, so no one, particularly not the Delta and Americans of the world, is standing in their way. It's part of a bigger trend as ultra-low-cost carriers, that's ULCCs, have seen their market share in the U.S. grow from 6% in 2015 to 11% in 2023, according to the website Simple Flying. The question is whether the growth will last. Analysts have said one mark against ULCCs is the fact that just as they're quick to expand, they're also quick to completely close up shop if the market can't deliver. While one hand may giveth, one hand may taketh away, said Henry Hartvelt, an analyst with Atmosphere Research Group. If a route or market doesn't perform, airlines are very aggressive about saying, you know what, we tried to compete here and it didn't work out. RDU is in an enviable spot, and while the growth seems sudden, it's actually been building for decades. Frontier Airlines was the first ULCC carrier to dig its heels into RDU, taking over from Midwest Airlines in 2010. By 2011, Frontier was referred to as North America's leading low-cost airline. At RDU, the only carrier that came close was Southwest. But while Southwest has since streamlined its business model, including announcing earlier this year that it would start charging for baggage as an extra, it didn't have the piecemeal growth that Frontier and ULCC similar to it had. Passengers could save money on the lower-cost airlines by only paying for what they needed, whether it was seat selection or carry-on baggage. The a la carte model was adopted and perfected by other airlines, and they too saw the RDU opportunity. Allegiant Air launched its first nonstop flights out of RDU in 2015. Spirit Airlines came on board in 2019. Sun Country Airlines followed in 2021. But those new players couldn't find their footing after the pandemic. Allegiant vacated altogether in 2022. Spirit, which had 7 flights at its debut, served just one destination by 2025. And Sun Country stuck to its inaugural destination of Minneapolis. Avelo and Breeze, however, brought ULCC's front and center at RDU. Their appearance had some incumbents fighting back. Just weeks after Avelo's nonstop to Punta Cana took off, for example, American announced its own Dominican Republic flight. But incumbent ULCCs, too, don't want to let the startups win. Following its emergence from bankruptcy, Spirit announced it was launching 5 new flights in 2025. Frontier, too, has announced new destinations. And Avelo and Breeze keep touting RDU as core to their networks. How ULCCs stay nimble. International attention from new-to-RDU players has also increased as startup carrier Bermuda Air plans to debut in 2025. Bermudair CEO Adam Scott said early ticket sales are promising, and he's hoping to follow Avelo and Breeze's lead by eventually adding frequencies at RDU. As with Avelo and Breeze, Bermudair offers a streamlined approach meant to stand out against legacy airlines. The legacy guys, the whole approach has been to shuffle as many passengers as possible through congested hubs where they dominate. Our models, it's much more about trying to find the great ways to connect people directly, he said. Political tensions have caused stress, particularly with planned launches of Air Canada's new nonstop to Vancouver and WestJet's nonstop to Calgary, both planned for June. But the real opportunity for more growth at RDU could be in ULCCs. Weeks after the debut of its international flights to Montego Bay and Punta Cana, Avelo was already planning its nonstop to Nassau. While RDU continues to work on global connectivity by courting major airlines like Ireland's Aer Lingus, the ULCC community just keeps coming, and analysts don't see that changing. They have an advantage over the Aer Linguses and the Lufthansas of the world, flexibility. The seasonality and limited frequencies they're putting out allow ULCCs to make changes quickly, a feat both Avelo and Breeze have demonstrated repeatedly as they terminate some routes and make announcements about others. Hartvelt said it's easier for ULCCs to expand, as they typically have fewer frequencies. That means it costs less to launch a flight, but that also means that they can pivot quickly by abandoning an airport if the numbers don't work. In February, for example, Breeze reduced service from Connecticut's Bradley International Airport, including flights to both Wilmington and Concord in North Carolina. Both Avelo's Levy and Breeze's Neilman have said they look to expand in small airports. For example, by launching service from New Haven, Connecticut, they can offer New England flyers an easy alternative to the congested Boston Logan International Airport, for example. But RDU bucks the trend as it is no longer a small airport. But it is a contested market in that it's not a hub that's dominated by a single legacy player such as Charlotte, Hartvelt said. And if airline startups want to grow their networks, they need to find growing markets where they can compete. What happens at a certain point is there are only so many new havens in the country that you can exploit, said Jay Sabat, senior aviation analyst at Aviation Watcher Skift. when you start to grow, you have to start thinking, we have to go to something bigger. We're not going to go to Atlanta or Dallas. They're just too large. Enter RDU, where multiple airline executives said the market dynamics just make sense, as do the marketing incentives. RDU's Air Service Development Program awards for new service. Levy said, Avelo likes to go do things that others are not doing. And now that other airlines, too, have implemented the strategy, it's just doubling down, evolving its RDU service with demand. We like to blaze our own trail, Levy said. We can't prevent others from following. If they do, it makes the financial returns typically not as good, but that doesn't mean that it's not good. We compete very well against Breeze. Both Levy and Breeze's Neilman say fleet can be a limiting factor in their growth, as manufacturing issues have plagued the entire industry. The result is a very unpredictable supply chain right now that's constraining the aircraft supply, Levy said. And that strain includes international travel. Both Avelo and Breeze focus on leisure traffic with a short radius. We like to fly to a radius where we can get back with the same crew, Levy said, noting it's a good model when it comes to retaining and attracting pilots. We like our airplanes to come home every night. That means future international destinations are likely to be limited to Mexico and the Caribbean. And new entrants will mean even more competition, including Bermuda Air, a startup airline debuting a nonstop to Bermuda later this year. Leisure traffic also has staying power in a time of geopolitical uncertainty. Air Canada and WestJet, for example, have both committed to new flights to Canada, but looming tariffs and tensions in Washington, D.C. have cast doubt on whether their planned additions will actually take off as scheduled in July. But as more airlines enter the market and add flights, passenger volumes, too, increase. In February, typically a slow month, 950 passengers trek through the airport, and the growth keeps coming. Supporting it has been a challenge for RDU. If you think of roadways, your security checkpoints, your concessions, curbs, all of those are going to have more strain without trying to invigorate those assets and make sure there's enough capacity for people. Stephen Van Beek, director of STEER, a transportation consultancy that works with RDU, told the airport board earlier this year. In January, RDU Chief Financial Officer Ron Kaposius said the airport is at the point where every dollar of operating income is critical and moving projects forward. The airport recently increased its annual project budget from $841 million to $2.5 billion, but federal funding freezes have brought in some uncertainty. When asked about the new runway, which is dependent on federal funding, an airport spokesperson said in March that there are no new updates on federal funding for the runway. For now, airlines are not slowing down. But RDU executives, including Bill Sandifer, Chief Development Officer at RDU, have said repeatedly that if the airport doesn't beef up facilities to meet the passenger volumes that are coming, that growth could stop or even shrink. We've got time for this week's Project Life article. Project Life concerns executive health and worker wellness in the Triangle. This week's story, the battle against a recurrent threat. Skin cancer isn't a one-time fight for many patients, but an arsenal of new treatments have had success in preventing the disease. The writer of the article is Connie Gentry. One and done is rarely true in the realm of skin cancers. Not only will one in five Americans have skin cancer by age 70, according to the Skin Cancer Foundation, but also 60% of skin cancer patients will be diagnosed with a second skin cancer within 10 years of their first occurrence, reported JAMA or JAMA Dermatology. It's the most prevalent kind of cancer and continuing to increase every year. Roughly 17% of the U.S. population, more than 58 million people, currently have actinic keratosis, the most common precancerous skin condition, and over 5.6 million Americans are expected to be diagnosed this year with either basal cell carcinoma, squamous cell carcinoma, or melanoma. The American Cancer Society reports the most common skin cancers, basal cell or squamous cell, can be cured with various types of local treatments such as cryotherapy or topical chemotherapy or with minor surgery. Standard excisions or shave excisions are common, but a procedure called MOHS, that's M-O-H-S, micrographic surgery is recommended if there is a high risk of the skin cancer will come back after treatment or the extent of the skin's cancer is not well known. the type and size of skin cancer, where it is on the body, and the patient's underlying health condition are also considered when weighing whether to do the Mohs procedure, which the American Cancer Society states often results in better outcomes than some other forms of surgery and other treatments, but is usually more complex and time-consuming than other methods. Parker Eels, administrator for the Cary Skin Center, said Mohs micrographic surgery has the highest cure rate, up to 99% effectiveness. The procedure is done in stages where a surgeon with specialized training in the Mohs technique removes a thin layer of skin, which the ACS explains is rapidly frozen, stained, and then checked under a microscope. If cancer cells are still detected within the surgical margin, the surgeon removes another layer and repeats the microscopic review. The thing that's so wonderful about the Mohs procedure is that it maximally conserves tissue. In other words, it only takes as much tissue as is necessary to cure the cancer. Eel said, it's typically done in a single visit, and if it leaves a defect where the cancer was removed, the surgeon can do everything from flaps to tissue transfers to repair that, so it's a very efficient way to deal with skin cancer. The Cary Skin Cancer is credited as the state's first Mohs micrographic surgery facility by the Surgical Review Corporation, a nonprofit patient safety organization that headquartered in Raleigh, that accredits hospitals and ambulatory surgical centers meeting defined parameters of care. To receive the accreditation, a facility must perform at least 1,000 Mohs procedures per year for each applicant surgeon, or 1,500 Mohs procedures in a 2-year period for each applicant surgeon. There are 2 certified Mohs surgeons in the Triangle office of Cary Skin Center and 1 in its Southern Pines facility. Across the 27 years that the Cary location has been in operation, they have received patients from more than 350 referring physicians around the state. The vast majority of referring physicians are dermatologists who do biopsies on suspicious lesions, discover a skin cancer, and then refer their patient to a Mohs surgeon. However, about 35% of the cases come to us from primary care doctors who discover a skin cancer, Eel said. The majority of their patients are dealing with either basal cell carcinoma or squamous cell carcinoma, but some are diagnosed with melanoma that is in situ, meaning it's non-invasive, and it's contained to the epidermis. The 5-year survival rate for patients whose melanoma is detected and treated early is 99%, according to the Skin Cancer Foundation. However, all forms of skin cancer can be life-threatening. Globally, there are more than 5,400 deaths every month from non-melanoma skin cancers, and in the U.S., more than 8,400 melanoma deaths are projected for 2025. Exposure to ultraviolet radiation from the sun or from artificial sources such as tanning beds are the leading cause of skin cancers. Many of the Cary Skin Cancer patients, skin center patients, are people who have spent excessive time in the sun. Farmers, construction workers, and military veterans. But tanning beds are the risk factor most easily avoided. People who used a tanning bed before age 35 have a 75% higher risk of developing melanoma, reports the Skin Cancer Foundation, which also cited a study that revealed 97% of women diagnosed with melanoma before age 30 had used tanning beds. Daily use of sunscreen with an SPF of 15 or higher is the first line of defense to combat UV radiation from sunlight, and it's been shown to reduce the risk of developing squamous cell carcinoma or melanoma by 40 to 50%. But some folks take more proactive preventive measures. Robert Royster, whose Ruckus Pizza is opening at 6th location by summer, likes to spend as much time outdoors as possible, but he also sees a dermatologist yearly. He's always telling me to use more sunscreen because I always tan, and since I grew up at the coast, I have 20 or 30 years of skin damage, said Royster, who has had a couple of spots cut off, but all were non-cancerous. That could change. When a friend had actinic keratosis, he learned about a more aggressive preventive treatment. She also had grown up on the coast, so after they cut out what they could, her doctor prescribed fluorosil, which is a cream, because that catches any cancer that the cutting did not catch, Royster said. I called my dermatologist and said, hey, a friend of mine is doing this fluorosil treatment. What do you think of it for me? And he said it was a great option for me. That raised yet another question for Royster, knowing how much time he had spent in the sun. Why wouldn't his dermatologist have already prescribed the preventive cream? The answer he got was a less than satisfactory, "We just don't treat it that way." But at $15 a tube, Royster is thinking more people at higher risk of developing skin cancer should know about the treatment. He posted a PSA on social media. 20 people who saw the PSA called me about it, then asked their dermatologist. Although it may not be the first preventative measure a physician considers, primarily because of potential skin irritations, the Skin Cancer Foundation states that 5-fluorouracil, that's 5-FU, is one of the most commonly used treatments for actinic keratoses. It also notes that it is approved by the Food and Drug Administration to treat superficial basal cell carcinoma with cure rates between 80 and 90%, and is sometimes used for superficial squamous cell carcinoma. About this project, Project Life exists to shed light on executive health and worker wellness. The series includes regular articles on worker stress, work anxiety, depression, and addiction-related issues that creep into the workplace, and personality features from executives that are on the forefront of the fight for better health in our workplaces. California gelato offering comes to North Hills. Pour some sugar on North Hills. Tifa Chocolate and Gelato, based in California, has leased 1,736 square feet in Cap Trust Tower at 4208 Six Forks Road. It joins a number of sweet-centric shops in North Hills, including Kilwin's, Ben & Jerry's, Edible Art Bakery and Dessert Cafe, and the recent Captain Cookie and the Milkman. Tifa is replacing Century 21 Real Estate in the space located next to Yard House. Sean Dill is a local franchisee for Tifa. Christina Coffee with Lee & Associates represented Dill with his North Hills lease. Tifa serves more than a dozen gelato flavors, including strawberry, balsamic, pistachio, lemon curd, stracciatella, and salted caramel. The brand also sells pastries, chocolate bars, bonbons, truffles, and other grab-and-go treats. Tifa's North Hills space will also feature an outdoor patio. We have run out of time for today's episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Business Journal is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. So long until next time. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.